More compelling talk radio, 1320 WILS, is live and Lansing with Michael Cohen and the Capital City Recap.
Good evening. I'm Michael Cohen, producer Mike Peterson. It is Monday, and this is 1320 WILS. Great to have you here tonight. We'll talk to the man that Steve Jobs recruited to help run Pixar, turn it into a multi-billion dollar company. He'll tell us his story. Also, the concern about Donald Trump cutting EPA funding could actually directly affect the Great Lakes. Even Republican state lawmakers now reacting negatively to that. We'll break that down. Let's begin, though, with the executive order that President Trump signed today, a new one banning immigrants from coming to the U.S. from six countries. We're certainly going to see CARE and the ACLU now coming out calling it Islamophobic and anti-Islamic. But let's talk to someone that really understands the issue, a leading global voice against radical extremism. Raheel Raza is with us. She's with the ClarionProject.org and the president of the Council for Muslims Facing Tomorrow. Raheel, great to have you on WILS.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And what's your background? Where are you from originally, Raheel?
Well, I was born in Pakistan, and I grew up in Pakistan to a very different country and a very different Islam, if I may say so. And I came to Canada 30 years ago, and now I'm a proud Canadian citizen.
And you're Muslim yourself?
Yes, I am a practicing observant Muslim.
And when you see Donald Trump's reaction to Islam, when he talks about extremism in Islam, what do you think about that?
Well, he's saying exactly what we've been saying for the last 25 years, that there is a section of Muslims who are extreme, and they have been radicalized. There is a global jihadist insurgency at play, and we need to tackle it head on, and he is the first leader in many, many years who has actually addressed the issue head on, and we are glad that he has, because unless you pinpoint the virus, you can't really find a cure for it.
Okay, because every time that happens, though, people like him are called Islamophobic. How are we to react to that?
Well, this word Islamophobia is a word that was coined by the very people that we are up against, by the Islamists, those who have politicized my faith, and these organizations who have put this out there so that there could be no discussion, debate, criticism of Muslims or Islam. And, you know, Islam itself is an idea. It's not a race. It is open to criticism, just like any other faith is. Muslims are open to criticism. If they're going to be, if there are some people who are bad people and they're going to do bad things, they definitely should be criticized, because not criticizing them is going to bring us to the level of problems that we are facing today.
We're talking to Raheel Raza here on WILS. The ban itself against six countries, is this a smart move?
Yes, I believe it is a practical and smart move, and I should mention here that it is not a definitive ban. It's a temporary moratorium until things can be sorted out in-house, until security and safety at borders can be tightened, until the country and its security experts can figure out how to deal with this situation of a radical ideology. So yes, it is a very practical step in the right direction. There are 56 Muslim countries in the world. This is only sixth countries where this stoppage has been put from. And these are mostly failed states.
Raheel, tell me this. How do we effectively determine which Muslims are here with peaceful intentions versus those that may become radicalized?
Well, the Muslims that are already here, of course, it's very hard to vet. But any Muslim who is coming to America for a better future, it is not difficult to figure out, you know, do they believe in making a second set of laws, Islamic laws, Sharia law, a law of the land? You know, I'm part of a Muslim reform movement. We have a vision and a statement and a declaration that clearly identifies what reformist, progressive, liberal, small L liberal Muslims are all about. Do they believe in gender equality? Do they believe in separation of mosque and state? Do they believe in political Islam? Do they believe in armed jihad, which was a notion of the 7th century? We want to bring Muslims into the 21st century.
How do you separate Islam from political Islam?
Oh, it's very easy. Islam, the Islam that I follow, is a spiritual message. It is a private connection between me and my Creator. It is not for public consumption. It is about compassion and mercy. It is the youngest of the three Abrahamic faiths, and it is just like, you know, a continuation of Judaism and Christianity. But it has been mutated and politicized and turned into an evil ideology and presented as something which is political, which is about hegemony and a supremacist ideology. So ISIS, Al-Qaeda, the Taliban, doesn't matter which name you call them by, all have one goal in common. They hate the West. They want to destroy the West and its values because they think they're evil. But they have no qualms about coming and utilizing the freedoms that we have in the West, which they don't find in many of these Muslim theocracies.
Now, why are they so threatened by what we represent here in the West?
Because have this. They don't have democracy. They don't have the freedom of expression, the freedom of religion, the freedom of speech, that and gender equality. They're totally...
Yeah, but isn't that what they want? They want to have the supremacy of men over women, that kind of thing?
Well, they may want that, but that is a patriarchal power issue. It's got nothing to do with the faith. Of course, that is what they want, but that is wrong. And that is what people like me and my organization are pointing out, that yes, that is what they want. But how does that make that right? They are not the majority. The majority of 1.6 billion Muslims do not follow this ideology of hate and divisiveness and Islamist supremacy. They just want to live their lives 9 to 5, go to work, bring up their children. But unfortunately, they are the silent majority. They're not speaking out. Yeah. So they are part of the problem. Narrative of the extremists is louder than the rest of us because they are funded in billions of petrodollars from the oil-rich countries that we are still having deals with. And this has been going on for the last 40 years.
We're dependent on them, essentially. What about these Pew polls that show the majority of Muslims, even in the U.S., support the idea of Sharia law? How do you make sense of that?
Well, we don't make sense of that because that is an ideology and it has been perpetuated by the very same Islamist organizations that have told them that this is what they need to do. When I came to Canada 30 years ago, there was never any mention of Sharia. There are two kinds of Sharia. There is personal Sharia, which is a moral and ethical responsibility that we follow. It is about how we live our lives. And then there is Sharia as governance, which we do not want in the Western world. But this is something that has grown, as I said, in the last 30 years because, they have found freedom to do this. And our leadership, especially in the last 8 years of the Obama administration, due to political correctness and appeasement of the very same people, did not do anything to stop this rhetoric or did not do anything to say, hey.
President Obama, his position was this was essentially, casting this extremist brush on the entire religion of Islam. What did he have wrong in the way he approached Islam?
Well, what he had everything absolutely wrong. First of all, Muslims are not a monolith. They are not all one where you can say, you know, Muslims are being painted with one brush. If among the Muslim communities there are people who have subversive agendas, they have to be pointed out. They are there in every community. So we don't say that, no, we do not like so-and-so doing such a thing because it's going to tarnish the whole community. Why is there a separate set of standards and regulations in dealing with the Muslim community? We are not that delicate. Our faith is not going to be harmed if someone says that, yes, there is extremism, there is radicalization. We have to pinpoint the problem in order to find a solution for it. It's like a virus.
Rahil Raza on WILS. Rahil, what now, when you are outspoken the way you are, do you find yourself being threatened?
Of course. How would I know that what I'm saying is having an impact if I was not being threatened? Yes, I am threatened. I have death threats. I have fatwas. I get hate mail. It's a terrible thing to have a hate mail folder in your email, but yes, I do. But that does not stop me because I'm not out for popularity. My faith tells me that you must speak with truth and justice, even if it goes against your own people and your own family. And we have suffered long enough. My Muslims have suffered more at the hands of radicals than non-Muslims because they don't allow diversity within Islam. They don't allow different parts.
You live in Canada, so you're in the Western world. Why expose yourself to all this?
Because it is for the future of my children and my grandchildren. They happen to be Canadian Muslims. and I don't want them to inherit an ideology that has nothing, that has very little to do with the spiritual message of the faith and everything to do with politicization. We follow the laws of the land in which we live because this is what the Islamic concept is. But what these people, the extremists and radicals, have done is presented a very, very mutated version of the faith, and I don't want my children to believe that that
is fact,
the faith.
Raheel, I should note that new Homeland Security report found that most of the radicalization occurs after people come to the U.S., not when they arrive initially. It's after years of being here. Well, how do you make sense of that process of radicalization? Why does it happen once they've been here and seen the freedoms of our Western world?
Well, it happens through, we live in a global village now. You know, the internet is a very strong product. And of course, the organizations that are manipulating the minds of our young people exist right here. I mean, today there are three ideologies that affect Muslims, especially young Muslims: the ideology of the Muslim Brotherhood, the ideology of Khomeinism for the Shias, and the ideology of Wahhabism that comes from Saudi Arabia. They have ways of, and make billions of dollars in funding to export their message.
They're affecting kids that are here in the Western world with all the other, I mean, how are they able to have such influence from far away?
Well, they're influencing them through organizations. They're influencing them through the internet. And
what's the attraction?
The kids
That's
in the
what I'm
West
asking. What?
Because they are telling them that you are there and it is your duty, your spiritual duty, to fight a jihad against the people where you are living. Yeah. And that is a terrible thing. But they're teaching them about us and them. They're dividing to rule. Yeah. They're telling them not to follow the values of where we live. So my suggestion to these people is that they should not come here. You'll buy them a one-way ticket to go home.
Yeah, we always see the families after the attack saying, we had no idea, no inclination at all this person had been radicalized. Do you believe that? Is there anything the families can do?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that question?
Yeah, when you see attacks here, you'll see the families saying they had no idea that the individual was radicalized. Do you believe that, and is there anything they can do about it?
Well, you know, I find this very hard to believe. I have two sons who are 30 and 32. I know exactly what they think and how they're brought up because I, as a mother, have brought them up. If they had been radicalized, I would have known. So, yes, there are some cases, few cases, in which the children have been isolated and so the parents don't know. Mm-hmm. But largely, I think the families definitely see the signs, but they don't want to acknowledge it. They don't want to accept it. And, you know, as a parent, I can understand the denial where it's hard for parents to acknowledge that their children have been radicalized. But this is what we are trying to convince youth, that this is a disease. Mm-hmm. And if they, are being radicalized by someone, because let me remind you, nobody is born a terrorist. They are taught radicalization, and someone is teaching them. The person we are not going after is the person who is teaching the radicalization. So, you know, you find the terrorists, you arrest them, but who is teaching them this?
Well,
have to go to the root causes of where hate and radicalization is taught.
We'll talk about this some more, hopefully. Raheel Raza with us, a leading global voice against radical Islamism, and she's with the ClarionProject.org and president of the Council for Muslims Facing Tomorrow. Raheel, it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.